You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. You can join our conversation today at 800-838-3760 or in the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Send your emails, if you have those, to our live broadcast, jx@jeffnet.org. Human trafficking is a worldwide problem, including here in the United States. In the year 2010, the U.S. Department of Justice investigated more than 2,500 cases, of which more than 1,000 of those involved children. Joining us this morning are Natalicia Tracy, the executive director of the Brazilian Immigrant Center in Boston and a PhD candidate in sociology at Boston University, and Ivy Soriopas is on our line this morning, and she is the director of the Anti-Trafficking Initiative and the Asian American Legal Defense and Education Fund. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, let me ask a question, first of all, starting off with Natalicia. Am I saying your name correct or close?
Natalicia, very close.
Very close, okay. Tell me a little bit about this. I would imagine that human trafficking has been a problem since right after humans made their debut, but it's actually a growing problem now in the United States, isn't it?
That's right. It's a huge problem. Between 27 and 30 million people are trafficked every day. It's a huge problem because many of them are not just being trafficked for a sexual exploitation, but also a little bit more than half are trafficked for labor reasons as well, for work, including many of them being domestic work.
Now, are people being trafficked into the United States as well as out?
No, mostly into the United States. It's, as you know, it's a huge industry that is very profitable. So it's about a $31 billion industry annually. So most people are trafficking into the U.S.
Ivy, I was going to ask you a question. Are there any groups of people or individuals who are most vulnerable to being kidnapped and put into this position?
Well, can I just correct something that I just said? That he says a lot of people are trafficked into the U.S., but I also want to mention that there are many people that are, you know, trafficked around the U.S. as well, especially children. I'm sure someone will talk about that. Sorry. Go for it.
I'm sorry. Can you repeat the question?
I was just wondering if there are any groups of people or individuals who are most vulnerable to being kidnapped and put in this situation.
Well, human trafficking is a very complex problem in which it's not only through force in which someone can be trapped in this kind of involuntary servitude. The requirements can be force, fraud, or coercion, and coercion is the most gray area kind of element where someone might not be kidnapped, but they might have been defrauded about the working conditions in which they find themselves. And certainly the most vulnerable groups are the ones where there are a number of factors working against their favor. Someone who's limited English proficient, someone who lacks education, maybe someone who's extremely young or much older, someone who doesn't have regular immigration status and is very vulnerable to be exploited in that way, someone who's unaware of their rights and how the laws in this country are there to protect them. So there are certainly a number of vulnerability factors in play.
Do they all?
Yeah, and I can speak from my own experience. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, in these situations, are threats often leveled against the individuals or against family members to keep them in this situation?
As, you know, as you were saying, it really varies and it's very complex. In my case, I was offered a job in the U.S. I was 17, and the family promised me the opportunity to go to school to learn about a new culture, and they said I would be part of the family. But then I found myself in a situation where they had my passport. I didn't speak the language. I didn't have any family or friends. I was at their mercy. And you were in a situation that you're powerless to make any changes or to do anything until you can figure that out of that situation. And as you said, another common problem is now with immigration issues, a lot of the women, they are afraid of reporting problems, so they don't know where to report to for a multitude of reasons.
If you'd like to join the conversation this morning, you're on the Jefferson Exchange. Our toll-free number, 800-838-3760. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Or you can send us an email to jx@jeffnet.org. For folks who have passed through this, what kind of legal representation is available to them?
Legally speaking, there are a number of different remedies that are available to someone who has been trafficked or suspects that they might be a trafficked person. Certainly reporting to law enforcement authorities, especially if safety is an issue or an urgent matter, is at the top of the list. Calling federal authorities, whether it's the FBI or other enforcement authorities, would be helpful in that situation to try and get the person out of harm's way, or maybe loved ones who might be threatened overseas. In addition to criminal law enforcement, there are also agency or administrative remedies, like contacting the Department of Labor or other agencies that are tasked with trying to help identify and serve this vulnerable community. And then there are agencies like my own, the Asian American Legal Defense Fund, and other agencies where we provide civil relief and social services. We can assist foreign nationals who need immigration remedies and assistance to stay in the country if they need to do so, or reunite with their families here in the United States. And then there are also civil legal remedies. I can sue perpetrators for money damages because most of the time in these trafficking situations, persons are not being paid appropriately, grossly, under the minimum wage and fair labor standards laws, or not paid at all. And so this is a way of achieving some form of economic justice.
Are the laws in this country fairly supportive?
As of this year, all 50 states have laws against human trafficking, and the federal government has had the Trafficking Victims Protection Act in place since 2000. So there are a number of laws available to protect U.S. citizens and foreign nationals who've been trafficked within and into the United States.
We're discussing human trafficking, a growing problem around the world and here in the United States as well. We're going to take a short break and then we'll be back with your questions. Our topic this hour, human trafficking. It's a growing problem both globally and here in the United States. My guests this morning are Natalicia Tracy and Ivy Suryopas, and they both work on the forefront of this to try to help those who have been trafficked and to get out of that life and to get some kind of restitution for their problems. Ivy, is prosecution fairly successful in this country?
I would say there are mixed results when it comes to prosecution. I think one of the challenges for federal authorities or even local and state authorities is the high burden of proof that they need to meet in order to move forward with a criminal case. You need to show that the person is guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. And I think that has led a lot of prosecutors to be reluctant to bring cases forward, especially domestic worker cases, when there is not a lot of corroboration or proof, and it results or boils down to a he said, she said scenario. And that's very disheartening for a lot of advocates like myself, because the number of trafficking survivors that I encounter are not limited to big, you know, complicated criminal schemes. Most of the cases that I encounter are single victim cases or small victim cases where they don't have the benefit of having a lot of evidence to support their claims. And it really does come down to the testimony of the survivor herself.
So there's not a lot of hard evidence in this case. That's in cases, is what you're saying.
In a lot of cases, yes, that's correct.
I was going to ask a little bit about supportive services for these individuals. Natalicia, I know you work with that a lot, don't you?
Yes, we do. We have a legal clinic that supports a lot of victims of, especially labor trafficking victims. Our clinic, basically, because we are worth a cent and we are in a community, so we gain a lot more access to this information than the Attorney General's Office or Department of Labor would. So because they might come in with a violation of a wage case, that when we start looking into it, we learn that the person who actually, you know, describing the circumstances, the actual victim of a forced labor, or of course we call it trafficking for labor. For example, right now we have a case at the center pending that this person, she was working 7 days a week. She had to ask for permission to go anywhere, and that she was paying half of what would be minimum wage per week without paying any overtime. And in addition, when she learned that she was sick, she had a brain tumor, the family basically just left her behind with unpaid wages, with expired visa, and nowhere to turn to. So, you know, it's something that we learning more and more that it's really hard to identify those cases and have victim come forward. So it takes a lot of effort, and it's hard for them to trust you, and they're very concerned about the safety and deportation and immigration issues, especially in situation like that. And again, they don't know about their rights. In most cases, they don't know. They just don't know.
This question is for either one of you. Is it easier or harder for someone who's been in this situation to get citizenship here in the United States?
It depends, right? If you can have a strong case, like the case that we have right now that is pending, we are working with the Department of Labor to see if you can get a visa for this person. She's sick. She's undocumented because they allow her visa to expire. You know, they owe her over $50,000 of unpaid wages. So we're working with them and really hoping that some cases are harder than others to prove that the person indeed is a victim of being harmed in many ways and deserve to receive this adjustment of status.
I'd also add that not all of our clients want citizenship. After having experienced such a traumatic experience here in this country, and especially if they're not identified in a timely way by government authorities, or maybe the government authorities re-traumatized them some way in the process of identifying them and maybe interviewing them, a lot of them feel like they just want to go back home because they feel like everything about this country has been tainted by the trafficking experience. So it's important to note that some voluntarily choose to repatriate.
For some folks, is it an issue of safety if they do go back to their home countries?
Indeed. There are a lot of clients who don't have that luxury. And if they do return to their origin countries, they face murder or serious harm or harm to their loved ones overseas. And so for those who might prefer to go back home, they don't have that option and need to find a way to survive here.
You can join our conversation this morning on the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about the growing problem of human trafficking. Our toll-free number, 800-838-3760, in the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, or you can send an email to us, jx@jeffnet.org. How do you go about identifying victims of human trafficking?
For my agency, the way we identify them is through a variety of means. Most of the referrals that I've gotten are through community-based organizations. We've done Know Your Rights presentations for organizations that work with high vulnerability communities like low-wage workers, such as domestic workers or restaurant workers. And after having been trained, they'll call us with potential cases. We've done op-eds in ethnic language press, and that's garnered some referrals that way. And then also law enforcement will refer to us any cases that they've identified.
We have a caller on the line from Medford. Jamie, go ahead.
Yes, good morning, sir. I, for one, as a totally born in this country, American citizen, I want to apologize for these people. And they get into the situation called indentured servitude, where they cannot pay things back. Like they pick tomatoes forever, expecting a different result, looking for opportunity in this country. It's just shame that they are being put in this position where they're practically slaves or indentured people. And I just wanted to shout out about that. And I'll just take anything else you guys have to say off the phone.
All right. Thank you, Jamie.
Oh, you're welcome.
This kind of goes maybe to the heart of education and changing culture. What are you doing to try to, besides talking to me this morning on this show, to educate people and let them know that there is a serious problem?
Well, here in Massachusetts and also in Connecticut, we one thing that we're doing, we are part of a movement, the National Domestic Workers Alliance, which is working to change the culture of the way we think about workers, domestic workers especially, because according to some stats, 52% of trafficked labor victims are domestic workers. So through our outreach, pushing for a Bill of Rights to regulate this industry as to be seen as real job where people deserve to get paid and need to follow laws, we believe that's going to help some of the issues. Through our workshops and outreach efforts, we are educating community members and churchgoers about the issues, and we're hoping to move forward. But we also are planning policies because one thing that I know from my own experience is that most domestic work is they are brought in as they're trafficked by the elite who bring them as a household servant with the collaboration of the U.S. government, because no questions are asked. They give the employers the visa for the work for the employee typically, right? So usually those are diplomats, doctors, and business executives that are coming to the Globe North, and they automatically give them B1, A3 or G5 visas, and they come in, and they don't give them any information about labor laws and regulations and how, people working in conditions of slavery, it's illegal in this country. So there's more work that needs to be done in that front, is that if you're giving someone a visa to bring a worker into the country, especially a domestic worker, that packet come with information saying there are regulations, there are labor laws, you have to follow, you have to comply, and there should be penalties if they don't, even though they're diplomats. They shouldn't be excluded from having to answer to, abusing and mistreating someone in this country.
I'd also add that we have also engaged in vigorous policy advocacy with officials, both at the federal level and the state level, to improve existing anti-trafficking laws, to make sure that they are actually human rights-based in their approach and not focusing solely on enhancing penalties and criminal penalties, because cool. That's very limited and short-sighted in many advocates' opinions. Also, in terms of educating the greater public, ALDEF is a member of the Freedom Network, and we have a conference every year, including one in San Francisco on April 1st and 2nd. And that is a wonderful gathering in which we basically develop a brain trust with other advocates in the field and experts so we can troubleshoot the best practices for approaching this problem.
I'd like to wade in a little bit on the immigration reform debate that's been going on for a few years now. What kind of impact would that have on protections for some of the victims or rights that they would have to deal with?
There are a couple of provisions in the Senate bill that has passed one, chamber of Congress right now that would be very helpful to trafficking survivors. One, it would raise the U visa cap number. U visa is a form of immigration relief for crime victims, including trafficking victims. and we've been meeting that cap, I think, usually by the fall. And so the number of people who are eligible for U visas are not getting that form of immigration relief, and they're stuck in a waiting line for the rest of the year. The other helpful provision in the Senate version of the immigration reform bill is a provision that creates protections against the unscrupulous practices of foreign labor recruiters. There are all these protections forbidding them from putting all these fees on migrants who are coming to the United States, which oftentimes plunge them into debt and subject them to debt bondage and involuntary servitude. There's a registry required for these recruiters so that they're vetted appropriately by officials, and it creates jurisdiction so that survivors and other victims of this trafficking scheme can bring them to court and finally seek justice against them.
Would changing the immigration laws so that it makes it an easier process toward a legal status, would that reduce the incentive for trafficking?
I think removing any kind of vulnerability for immigrants who come to this country, particularly those who come on the temporary worker visa program, would go a long way in preventing trafficking, because as it stands now, unscrupulous employers will take advantage of the current immigration laws that make it possible for them to say that they can call immigration and have a worker deported if they are unsatisfied with a worker's complaints about their working conditions. And right now, there are a lot of vulnerabilities in the current immigration law, and improving upon the existing law will help these workers gain even footing, and they'll finally be able to achieve the American dream that everyone else in this country is entitled to.
I'd like to add that even though we don't have, we're waiting on this, we believe that many people right now who probably are working in conditions of slavery, they are so because they are afraid of be found out and be deported. So we also believe the immigration reform that will be inclusive moving forward will also help a lot of people currently in really working under terrible conditions. So we're looking forward to resolving that in the future.
We are speaking this morning with Ivy Syriopas and not Alicia Tracy, and they are both at the forefront of working on this problem of human trafficking. According to the U.S. Department of Justice, it has become the second fastest growing criminal industry in the United States, just behind drug trafficking. About 2,500 cases were investigated in the United States in the year 2010. And more than 1,000 of those involved were children. At any given time, there's more than 12 million adults and children in forced labor in the United States, or bonded labor, or commercial sexual servitude. If you have a question this morning, please give us a call. The toll-free number, 800-838-3760. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Or some email you can send to jx@jeffnet.org, and we'll get your questions on the air. For folks who have come out of this human trafficking, are they often able to help you in ways to identify the broader issue? Do they tend to get involved with this process, or do they mostly, because of that experience, prefer to stay in the background?
Well, I should be answering that because, like I said before, I was labor trafficked to the United States, and for 2 years I was living under horrible condition. I was sleeping on a three-season porch. I would only eat food when there was some leftover from them. I was being paid $25 a week, working 7 days, and I was working 80 to 90 hours a week. And what I can tell you from my own experience is for a while I tried to block it because you feel like very vulnerable, and you also feel angry because you allow things like that to happen to you. But I feel very strongly about it, that I have the moral obligation to speak about these issues and to help other people, because no one deserves, no human being should ever be put in that situation, especially when you're young and vulnerable and you find yourself by yourself in that situation. So for myself and for the people that we've been helping, we encourage them to speak about these issues, because the more we speak about, the more the people become aware, the more we can educate members of the community to help other people who, to even maybe help avoid and create an intervention process through information, because it's a serious problem, and there's very little understanding of how deeply damaging it can be, this experience to the victims of it.
Natalicia, if you don't mind me asking, how were you able to escape from this situation?
After being in that situation for 18 months, I started looking around. I started to looking at the newspaper. I started questioning them. Why I need my passport back? Why do you have? Oh, we want to renew your visa. You know, why am I doing all this hours? So I started questioning them, and I told them that, you know, that it wasn't, that I didn't think what was happening was okay, and I wanted to leave. And I think at one point they realized that I was asking too many questions, and I said, I want to leave this space. And they said, go ahead and leave. You are on your own. No money, no family, no friends. And that's how I was able to do it. But I feel that some of the most privileged person, that they didn't really sort of, you know, lock me up in a situation where that I wasn't able to start questioning those conditions. So, but I'm sure there are people in a lot more traumatic and more difficult situation than I was.
We're taking your questions this morning on human trafficking and its consequences, a growing problem here in the United States. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll be right back with your questions. You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Milt Radford, filling in today for Jeffrey Riley. We're discussing human trafficking. It's a growing problem around the world and here in the United States. A number of issues affecting that. And our guests this morning are Natalicia Tracy and Ivy Suriopas, and they are working to help those who have been victims of that. We have a caller from Eugene. Bill, you're on the line.
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm really feel terrible about this trafficking, and I think our whole immigration law is totally bogus. And I'd like to ask your guests a question regarding our immigration law. What if they made a new immigration law that said everybody in the United States and not as a legal citizen has to be registered in 6 months? And if they're not registered within 6 months, it will be considered a felony, and they'll go through whatever. I mean, maybe heavy labor, whatever, but it'll be humane or be exported. But if they do register, that's a foot in the door for them to become citizens. And if they're single, healthy adults with no obligation to people in the United States, then they could go into service in America, like the CCC Corps was back in the 30s, or they could go active duty in the military or enlist the program on these, you know, Vista, and then after that time, they'd also earn money, but they would not be able to send that money home. That money would go into a separate account with their name. They could use it for education, buying a house when they get out of the program, and then they would also be set up. As soon as they got out of the program, they'd be legal to stay here. I guess you call it a green card forever, as long as they didn't create major felonies. And they'd be in 4 or 5 years, they'd be able to apply for citizenship. And also in the program, also have to close the borders tight. That'd be, you know, make the borders tight from now on. I just wonder how they'd feel about something like that. Thank you.
Thanks for the question, Bill. What do you say to that, either Ivy or Natalicia, about some kind of pathway in a broad sense? I think that's what the caller was also saying, is that some broad pathway to get to a legal status?
Well, we support a broad and inclusive immigration reform, because many people who are living in this country right now, they've been here for 1-2 decades, and they have children here. Some of them already have American citizen spouses. Some of them came to escape conditions of violence and poverty from their country. Many of them are also refugees. So we definitely support that. And we believe that that is the most fair thing to do, is create a space where people who are already part of the fabric of this country have the opportunity to contribute even more. Many of them already pay income taxes, and they're doing the best they can. And I agree with you. People who are here, they need to contribute. And of course, like any other group, we support inclusive reform for people who are hardworking, who are doing their best to be in this country and be good residents, and, you know, see this country as their home. And they are already American at heart. And we believe that's the best solution, because we'll resolve many, many problems that we see today, especially for people who are being trapped in forced labor.
I would also add that trafficking victims can have any kind of immigration status. They can be U.S. citizens, yes, or foreign nationals. They can be green card holders, those here on visas, or those who lack any kind of immigration status. It doesn't discriminate in that respect. And, in fact, a number of those who have been trafficked are here on visas, either as, you know, personal employees, a.k.a. domestic workers for diplomats and other high-ranking officials, or temporary workers who are working in farms and other agricultural industries. And the current immigration laws make it so restrictive for those on those kinds of visas that sometimes they're even more vulnerable to being trafficked and exploited than people realize. And it's very important to think about how complex this problem is and how we attack this problem in a preventative way. I also agree that providing some kind of path with a common sense approach that's based in human rights is extremely essential to any kind of response to human trafficking. And the immigration reform that we have on the table in terms of the bill that has been passed by the Senate is certainly one way in the right direction to try and resolve this problem.
We have a call from Grants Pass. Paul, you're on the air.
Good morning. You know, involuntary servitude is involuntary servitude is involuntary servitude. It's always slavery, regardless of what you call it, and it is always, in my opinion, wrong. However, I'm wondering if there's a cultural component to this. Are these cases concentrated in given economic groups or given social groups or given cultural groups? Do we see this more among people who are recent immigrants in terms of being slaveholders?
Interesting question. Is there a cultural component to this?
I don't know if there's any kind of organization out there that tracks the perpetrators of trafficking. So I don't know what statistics are out there that cover who is actually trafficking people. And the agencies and organizations that are tracking those who have been trafficked, I know U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services keeps the number of those who are granted T visas, which is a form of immigration relief for trafficking victims. And those numbers are in the couple thousand every year that are being identified. But obviously that is a very specific group that only counts for nationals, and that doesn't include green card holders or U.S. citizens who are being trafficked in this country.
Okay, one other comment. My significant other is a Ukrainian national, although she'll tell you she's a Russian. When she was thinking about coming to the United States, she and her daughter were actively recruited by German agents, and in retrospect were almost certain that, you know, the daughter was about 15, 16 years old, that they were in a situation where they were about to be sold into prostitution if they had gone forward with that. So organized crime is a huge part of this.
Yes.
That's all I have to say.
Thank you, Paul. You know, we talked about the cultural aspects of that, but in addition to that, are people who are trying to perpetrate these crimes, are they just taking loopholes, I guess, in the law in order to make this happen?
Just came out last week involving an Indian council who is working for the consulate here in New York, and she has been indicted for visa fraud for paying her domestic worker grossly under the amount that they had agreed upon for her to work here in the United States. And I think that if you look at the different allegations and the complaint, it shows that there was a contract that was written and signed for purposes of getting the visa to bring the domestic worker here in the United States. But once the everyone arrived here, the worker had much more hours than she was promised and paid much less pay than she was promised. And I think this is a very common tactic for a lot of traffickers who create this nice paper trail to protect themselves and insulate themselves in, you know, the event that they're caught. And a lot of payment and practices under the table really hide the illicit behavior that's going on in reality.
That's what I was just about to ask about, under the table payments. I imagine that it's very difficult to find a paper trail on some of these people.
Absolutely. I have another case where the worker found out that she had a bank account that she wasn't even aware of, that the employer had created for her, and she had no idea. She didn't have an ATM card. She didn't even know the name of the bank. And all of this was done by the trafficker without her knowledge. And you can see, like, how the perpetrator was doing that in order to protect themselves. And it makes prosecuting this case or suing a trafficker in this case very difficult, because there are so many ways in which they have created the illusion that they are compliant with the law.
Let me ask a question for those of us who are just seeing this on the sidelines and sort of horrified by it. Is there anything that we can do? What can we do to help in this situation?
I definitely think, first and foremost, educating yourselves more about the issue of human trafficking is essential. It's a very complex issue, and there's a lot of stuff in the media out there that's a little bit more sensational than the reality. Trafficking really needs to show someone who's subjected to forced fraud or coercion, regardless of industry. It can affect any person of any age, of any nationality, and really involves a person operating in a climate of fear in their workplace, someone who's induced or compelled to work there against their will. And after finding out more information about how complex trafficking is, really supporting laws or opposing laws that have a human rights-based approach. And then finally, really looking into yourselves or ourselves about how we might be complicit in trafficking. Look into the products that you're buying or how you're paying your domestic worker. Are you paying your employees appropriately? Are you buying products that don't have forced labor or child labor in their supply chains?
How can you, on that last point, how can you know? We're in a global economy, and you go down to the store to buy a T-shirt and you see that it's made somewhere else, but you really don't often know the working conditions. We hear stories all the time popping up in the media about places that are exposed for bad working conditions, let alone human trafficking. Are there ways that we can know that we're getting something that is produced in a reputable manner?
Sure. The State Department has a website called slaveryfootprint.org that is an interesting exercise that you can go to, where you click on links to show how many shirts do you have, how many sneakers do you have? How many diamond, you know, earrings do you have? And at the end of the exercise, you have a calculation of how many, quote-unquote, slaves have contributed to the products that you own. And it really forces you to think deeply about how we're complicit in terms of our behavior on a day-to-day basis. And then there are other websites like goodguide.com or other websites where they actually grade products based on how whether the manufacturers comply with the law with respect to employees, whether they test on animals, whether they hurt the environment. There are a lot of great websites like that that really help you think about how to be a conscientious consumer.
If you suspect that somebody in your neighborhood where you live has been a victim of human trafficking and currently is in that situation, is this the kind of thing where you immediately go to the police, or do you need to go a more discreet route just for the person's own safety?
I think it depends on the situation. If you strongly believe someone's been trafficked or being exploited in any way, you certainly should not try to intervene yourself. Contact a professional, whether it's an agency like Natalicia's or my own, or law enforcement. They should be the ones to identify the case and intervene.
Now, both of you, as I understand, are in the Northeast, in New York and Boston. Is that correct?
That's right.
Do you see a bigger problem with trafficking in one part of the country versus another?
For me, the stats that I see show that trafficking happens all over the country. And my agency, we're a member of the Freedom Network USA, and we have member organizations all over the country because there are needs all over the country. We have member organizations in cities where there are large immigrant populations because that's where a lot of the cases have been found, but that doesn't mean that there's not trafficking in rural areas, especially where there are agricultural workers.
Natalicia, I'd like you to recap again some of the supportive services that are offered for victims of human trafficking.
Here in Massachusetts, like in New York, we have the center. The center helps. There are several other organizations in the area that we work with them in partnership and in coalition to help identify and support victims. The Department of Labor, they've been great working with community members and community leaders to help identify and again and move forward with the cases. Another organization at the national level that I think is crucial too is the National Domestic Workers Alliance.
Natalicia, Ivy, I'm sorry we're running out of time. We'll have to wrap there for today.
Okay.
I wish both of you the best of luck in tackling this
Thank
problem.
You.
Join us tomorrow here on The Exchange, where we'll talk about, among other things, a new book about Richard Pryor.